Welcome to the Voice Over Work podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Newton Media Group, a family of creative services. On the podcast today, we take a little deeper look into a book introduced in a previous podcast with a chapter-by-chapter look at improve your conversations, think on your feet, witty banter, and always know what to say with improv comedy techniques, second edition, written by Patrick King, narrated by Russell Newton. Introduction. How many people can you name that can do a passable, if not flat-out hilarious, impersonations of Janet Reno, George W. Bush, Alec Trebek, or Robert Goulet? There's only one man who possesses the talent to do such a thing, Will Ferrell. For those who are unfamiliar with Will Ferrell, he's a stand-up comedian, actor, and improv comic who was one of the primary drivers of Saturday Night Live's SNL revival during the 1990s. He was able to parlay his exposure at SNL into a comedic movie career to rival that of any of the greats. He was also one of the first performers who was an automatic for me. What do I mean by that? It means that anything he released, acted in, or was involved in, I would, without question, automatically watch it. I'd buy it, rent it, or watch it in the theater on opening day, because no matter the subject matter, I had faith that he was going to make it bearable at the very worst. Whether he was the second coming of laughter itself, or his mannerisms just resonated with my personal sense of humor, Will Ferrell was one of my early role models and my first man crush during my impressionable years. Years ago, I learned that he got his start in the comedy world through improv comedy, as did many of today's household names in comedy. If I wanted to follow in the footsteps of my man crush, then I obviously needed to investigate improv comedy as well. I excitedly signed up for a weekend workshop. As a conversation coach now, you would think that I had a good foundation at the time. I sure didn't think I would have a hard time, but I was sorely mistaken. There were many similarities between improv comedy and what I teach, but the paths were starkly different to reach the similar goal of a great interaction. Where I tended to want to make conversation more predictable. Chapter 1. Improvisation Implementation. Great conversations don't simply appear spontaneously out of thin air. We might get lucky occasionally when we find people that happen to be on the same wavelength as us, or share an obscure set of similarities, but that's not something you can depend on to carry you through life. That's like trying to predict when and where lightning will strike, which isn't exactly known to be possible. People who can create flowing conversations with just about everyone they meet are definitely achieving something different and special. What do people who can make something out of nothing have in common? It doesn't happen consistently without planning and preparation. This isn't planning and preparation in the conventional sense, where you might jot down ideas of topics to bring up or dig through the news for the current events of the day. Those are important to some degree, but they can be equally as detrimental. If you have a flowchart for conversations, any slight deviation can spell your doom. The type of preparation you'd need is to understand the basic anatomy of great conversations. That's going to be the focus of this first chapter of Improve Your Conversations. What are the elements you should focus on and seek out in your conversations, and what should you try to avoid? Moreover, which of the bad habits are you guilty of? And are you compelling others to want to converse with you, or are you actually repelling them? A great conversation greatly resembles an improv comedy performance and ideally should involve all the rules that I'm going to cover in this book. Conversation equals improv. Let's spell out the similarities. Both a conversation and an improv comedy performance involve parties who can't read each other's minds. They're both unpredictable situations because you just never know. Chapter 2. Always say yes and. Rule of improv comedy. In response to someone else's suggestion, thought, or topic, always say yes and, which means that you drop your train of thought, adopt theirs, and add something to keep the conversation flowing. This is likely the one improv comedy method you may have heard of, and there's good reason because it's so effective.
It's one of the first rules taught to beginners and was taught to me on the first day of my workshop. Here's how this works in an improv comedy performance. Wait, look to your left. What is that? Is that a Godzilla monster? Oh my gosh, you're right. And it seems to have titanium armor and a laser mounted to its head. The first person asserted something, and the second person followed their lead, agreed, and even added an element for good measure. This rule is about how to keep an open mind and seize the power of possibility in your conversations. There are a few specific elements to this rule. The first element is that you are, some might say blindly, dropping whatever thought you had or story you wanted to tell. Don't get too comfortable with any grand plans. Remember, the conversation has to flow. It's as though you've been thrown a ball. Put down whatever you're holding so you can catch that ball and run with it. This is the most difficult part for most people. We enjoy sharing our thoughts with others, and sometimes we just want to talk about ourselves. That compulsion usually lacks balance, and people that aren't consciously aware of this rule typically lack the self-awareness to realize that others aren't enjoying hearing about every detail of their lives. This first part takes discipline and practice, because even if we're not... Chapter 3. Read and react to everything. Rule of improv comedy. Whatever someone is communicating, they did for a reason, so react to further that reason. One of the biggest challenges faced by neophyte conversationalists and improv players is reading people accurately. It's definitely a skill that requires practice. I distinctly remember an instance of speaking to a fellow attorney at a networking event years ago. I had said multiple times that I needed to find the bathroom and that I needed to go soon, but he just didn't take the hint. Every time I would say it, he would launch into another story about himself. I eventually realized he couldn't read people. It was like trying to read Chinese for him. He was not Chinese. Finally, I interrupted him mid-story and waltzed away gracefully. Learn to hear between the lines. It didn't take a mastermind to read me in that situation, but rarely is reading people's emotions and state of mind so clear and obvious. Players in improv comedy have to do the impossible on a daily basis, ascertain what someone is trying to communicate based on very few cues. At first, you might not catch the cues. Once you learn what they are, you'll start to spot them more and more. As you get better, you'll be able to see them coming before they even emerge, because there are certain patterns that always arise. That's how it is with improv comedy, and that's how it is with conversation. For instance, an eye roll can mean many things in isolation, but when you pair an eye roll with bored body language and a scoff, it probably means that someone is bored with you. Getting better at reading people is the first... Chapter 4. Be more specific. Rule of improv comedy. Don't force others to answer broad questions, because it puts a conversational burden on them and disrupts flow. Here's a piece of conversational advice that you've probably heard is devastating in improv comedy. Just ask broad and open-ended questions, and people won't be able to stop talking. Now, let's imagine what happens if we ask open-ended questions during an improv performance. So, what's your favorite hobby? Definitely hockey. It's not ideal, because there is zero context for the person to use, and they're left to analyze and interpret the question. What kind of answer does the questioner expect, and what exactly do they mean by hobby? What is a hobby, even? What does favorite mean? Those are the other queries that someone has to first answer internally when you ask them a broad, open-ended question. It destroys the flow. What you've really done by posing this type of question is given the other person a lot of extra work to do. Suddenly, it's not fun or natural anymore. If the question is really broad and uninspired, it can even feel like an interview question that you're now forced to come up with a good answer for. The exact same thing happens when you use those questions during normal conversations, but in slow motion, because the performer can literally say anything that pops into his or her mind, while the conversationalist will probably try to be accurate. So, what is your favorite hobby? I don't know. I'll have to think about that. What about you? Or, as you can see, people will never arrive at the answer to the question, and they deflect back to the other person. Chapter 5. Details, details, details. Rule of improv comedy. Provide specific details for people to relate to, react to, and run with. A couple of years ago, I was running a mock conversation for a client before a big networking event. The idea was to get him ready for the types of conversations he would encounter so it would be fairly predictable for him, and he'd be able to prepare talking points on topics that were likely to come up. It was all designed to reduce his anxiety surrounding the event. Here's how the first mock conversation went. Me. So, where are you from? Client. Illinois. Me. Okay. What city? Client. Chicago. Me. Okay. Were you born there too? Client. No, I wasn't. Me. Where were you born? Client. Right outside of Chicago. There are many problems with these types of answers, but the biggest issue is that there was just a glaring lack of details. Everything was answered with the bare minimum, with one word or less, and it was deemed to be a sufficient answer because it answered the literal question. Here's the mock conversation with better answers substituted in each phase. Me. So, where are you from? Client. Well, I was born right outside of Chicago, but most people don't know anything about Illinois, so I just say Chicago. Me. Where outside of Chicago? Client. It's a little town called Exodus, whose claim to fame is that Michael Jordan once crashed his car into our general store. Me. Chapter 6. No, no. Rule of improv comedy. Never lead with no. It disregards the direction that someone wants to go and makes it more difficult to work toward a common shared goal. Everything you say during an improv performance has an effect because someone else is directly relying on it to create a semblance of flow. Flow during a performance is like passing a baton during a relay race. There may be some stumbles along the way, and the baton might get fumbled, but it is always moving forward thanks to the teamwork of the participants. Leading with a no in the relay race of improv is like stopping completely and running in the opposite direction. It destroys any sense of flow because people don't usually predict that they're going to be met with a no up front. In most cases, when you stop people outright with a no, it will make them defensive because you've probably just shot down something they wanted to convey. No stops the flow. Here's another simple analogy. In many countries, car traffic is extremely busy and crowded. You might ask how people in dense European or Asian cities can even navigate when they're within inches of other vehicles. The answer is simple. There is predictability in the flow. They believe that the other vehicles are following a pattern of movement, and the flow is going to be predictable and consistent. Therefore, they can come within inches of other cars without worrying, because they know the other vehicles will be going in certain directions and only making certain turns. If you disrupt the flow, then the entire sense of predictability gets destroyed, and people won't understand where to go from there. To extend the metaphor, you may even find yourself having a bit of a conversational car crash. Chapter 7. Create motion. Rule of improv comedy. Scenes and interactions must always be moving somewhere and creating motion. Creating motion and having the interaction go somewhere does not mean what you might expect it to. When you have motion in a conversation, it's not that you're necessarily injecting the discussion with energy and high spirits. It's that you can't stay on the same topic forever, and the conversation needs to evolve in one way or another, or else interest will be lost. Good conversations are dynamic. Let's look at this in the improv comedy context. Let's suppose that the starting topic for an improv scene is a visit to the dentist, and it begins in the lobby. Does the scene stay in the lobby? Absolutely not. It moves in at least one of a few ways. The scene might move locations into the office of the dentist itself. The scene might introduce multiple different characters. The scene might change its focus and move away from the dentist altogether. The scene might change the initial purpose, and the patient is visiting the dentist because he is an assassin, and so on. Contrast any of those situations to a scene that stays exactly in the same lobby with the same characters. It may not be the worst scene, but it won't introduce any of the interesting settings or details that would arise from creating motion. And that's what we mean when we say an improv scene must go somewhere. You can't talk about the same thing in the same setting forever. Introducing new threads is always going to be more beneficial to the scene. To boil it down to one main sentiment, the people involved in either a conversation or an improv scene will have an easier time if they intentionally create motion and seek to introduce new elements. People love stories. A conversation is in many ways just a story. 8. It's entertainment, not discussion. Rule of improv comedy. Improv is about creating interesting situations for the sake of greater entertainment for the other players and the audience. Human beings have minds that are wired to pay attention to matters that are noteworthy and entertaining. The human brain can only store so much information. This is why it's constantly editing its experiences. When was the last time you remembered somebody you talked to at a dinner party who was extremely boring? Probably never. The reality of most people's lives is that the bulk of our time is spent experiencing very mundane things. We wake up in the morning, brush our teeth, and take a shower. We don't even remember if we do these things because they're so routine for us. However, that one time we almost drowned in the Pacific Ocean or went skydiving over Tanzania, these experiences are burned into our brains since they are noteworthy and entertaining. Events that involve thrills, chills, and spills will never leave our minds, even if we want them to. Feelings, not facts. The point is that entertaining and noteworthy situations are the best and most effective way to make an impression and captivate people. This is true in improv comedy and conversation. Which of the following scenarios do you think would create a better improv scene? One set in a clown college or one set in an empty room? What about a church versus a carnival? It's a fairly easy choice. The reason that we would almost always choose the clown college or carnival is because we imagine that they will be more entertaining. There's no point in paying attention otherwise. Improv comedy really serves two audiences. Chapter 9. Think on your feet. Rule of improv comedy. Great improv is a result of the creativity in spontaneous situations, and set agendas and outlines put a very low ceiling on that. Improv comedy performances are, guess what, improvised. The performers may occasionally work with a set theme that has been decided on beforehand, but there will always be large portions of an improv performance that involve taking direction from the crowd or audience. They can't predict what a crowd will give them to work with, so it's out of necessity that they can't have a strict agenda or outline. That's part of the fun in attending an improv performance. You feel that you are a part of the outcome and have contributed to the show. Obviously, there are situations where the performers have to think on their feet as quickly as possible, so they don't get tongue-tied and silent when everyone in the room is waiting. As an improv performer, you have to process what was said to you, try to project where you want the scene to go, and then predict what others might also say in response. You have to read people's body language, try to determine if there is any ulterior message, and actively provide detail that other people can work with. In a split second, you need to perform a full analysis of the entire scene and spit out words that will enhance the most important aspects of it. Oh, and you're in front of a crowd of people, and there's a team of people on stage waiting on your response. That might be the very definition of thinking on your feet. Improv comedy is collaborative in nature, but it's impossible to know what your teammates are thinking. How does all of this make you a better conversationalist? Recall that improv performances and Chapter 10, Support Your Teammates. Rule of improv comedy. Since you're all working toward a shared goal, you are everyone else's best supporting actor and cheerleader, focused on making them look good. The shared goal of an improv performance is to put on a high-quality, entertaining, and engaging show for the audience and have a good time while doing it. However, the only way you're going to be able to accomplish that successfully on a consistent basis is to realize that you must support your teammates frequently and help them out. You must put them in positions to succeed, assist them with the scene, and implicitly give them guidance and direction. In a sense, you must set them up to look good. Here's what this looks like in an improv scene. So you're the boss of this restaurant?
Yes, I am.
And I bet you're here to complain about something, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
It's the meat, isn't it? It's cow meat, I swear.
Yes, the hamburgers are very suspect.
Suspect? Are you Sherlock Holmes? Why are you so suspicious? Did the meat move at you?
Yes, and it made a lot of other noises.
Other noises? Well, we fixed our bathroom this morning, so it couldn't have been that. Although, the mice have come back.
What happened in that scene?
The actor didn't have much to say, or was tongue-tied, and couldn't think quickly on his feet in the scene's context. The good supporting actor picked up on this and started to provide details and prompts as to where the actor could go. In essence, he assisted the actor in moving the scene along and kept feeding him lines and tangents to use. Where the actor could only restate the previous comment or ask a simple question, the good supporting actor filled in the...
Chapter 11.
Remember and call back. Rule of improv comedy. Reincorporate specific elements from earlier in the interaction in different contexts for big laughs and continuity. First things first, what is a callback? A callback is a statement, question, or joke that refers to something that was mentioned earlier in the conversation. Essentially, the same element is brought up in two different contexts. Here's a quick example. You mentioned how much you loved pasta earlier in the conversation, and the topic at hand now is how you want to buy new shoes. A callback is essentially finding any type of association or link between those two topics. What is possible here as a callback? Anything that can make the two contexts relate or connect to each other. You love pasta, so you ate too much and need bigger shoes to fit your fat feet. A joke about how rich you are to be able to buy so much fancy pasta and new shoes. If you ate less pasta, you'd be able to buy more expensive shoes. It's important to note that these aren't necessarily jokes. They're just ways of making connections between a current topic and an older one. It's a shame that you're hearing these out of context, because it's more difficult to find the humor while reading or hearing them read out loud like a textbook. An in-joke is worth its weight in gold. Callbacks are one of the improv player's best tools because they accomplish so much for the scene in one move. The main purpose is to give the audience a greater sense of rapport with the people involved and to create an inside joke that makes the performance feel personal. Indeed, the vast majority of callbacks can't be planned and are truly like... Chapter 12. Shut up more. Rule of improv comedy. Improv comedy is about playing off others, and you can't do that if you are constantly waiting for your turn to talk and not listening to others. Shut up more. Raise your hand if this has ever happened to you. You're speaking with someone, and immediately after you finish speaking, they ignore absolutely everything you said,
don't even acknowledge it, and continue on their separate thought or tangent. It's as if they didn't hear a word of what you said, and they probably didn't. Can you imagine this happening during an improv performance? I want to go to the butcher shop now, so let's go. This table is fascinating. Do you think it was made in Germany? Ugh. Actor number one would be left confused and scrambling. Unfortunately, if we're honest with ourselves, this type of interaction happens often. For all of our good intentions, most people are terrible listeners. They want to say what they want to say, and they're more interested in their own lives than anyone else's. To them, sharing is caring, not listening. Talking is not the same as conversation. This is normal human nature, but this book is about reaching extraordinary conversations and interactions, so we need to stop the habit of not listening and simply shut up more. Remember that we always have that one shared goal, whether it be in an improv performance or conversation, and listening better is a huge step toward that. Real conversations are two-way streets, and you have to give space in order to receive it for yourself. Unfortunately, many people, hopefully not you, see conversation as a dumping ground. This will happen one of two ways. The person will either come in with a fixed agenda. Chapter 13, Use HPM. Rule of improv comedy. If all else fails, talk about history, philosophy, or metaphor. One of the most powerful techniques you can adopt from improv comedy is HPM. Conversations can hit rough spots that can easily spiral out of control. These difficult patches can lead to dead ends that may kill the conversation. Sometimes, all the energy and vibrancy of the conversation can evaporate almost instantaneously. You don't know exactly what your conversation partner just said, so you don't know how to reply. You end up just saying, "Yeah," and awkward silence ensues. What can you do when your mind blanks and you look around desperately trying to think of something to say? Imagine how alarming this would be in an improv performance. Let's set the stage. You're on stage with four other performers, and there are over 100 people in the audience. The spotlight is on you, and the longer you pause, the hotter you become, and the more sweat drips down your face. You feel like your face is going to explode from all the blood that has suddenly rushed there. Luckily, you remember HPM and blurt out something, and the performance carries on without missing a beat. These situations are why HPM is so important. HPM is like a mental template you can use to put a creative spin on your conversation or rescue it from certain peril. It's a concept that can apply to any topic and in any context, and most importantly, you don't need special training, information, or intelligence to use it. HPM represents aspects of life that everyone can relate to and thus is universal. In short, this means HPM. Chapter 14, Improv Potpourri. If you ask me, though no one ever does, there is a fairly effective array of improv comedy rules presented in this book, and they can all apply to normal, everyday conversations. The thing to always remember is that you should be collaborating with your conversation partner instead of fighting for airtime. I repeat it here because it's something that, even if you think you're doing it, you're probably not doing so as effectively as you should. I want this final chapter to be a jumble of additional improv comedy techniques that I didn't manage to devote an entire chapter to, but are important nonetheless. Of course, for some, these might be more useful or important. It all depends where you're coming from and what your weaknesses and strengths are. Be zen about it. Rule of improv comedy. Be as present and observant as possible so you can read the subtext and know where people want to go. This is a rule about paying attention to other people and stepping outside of your own head. Again, it might feel repetitive, but coming at it from slightly different angles each time is bound to affect the maximum amount of people possible. What does being present and observant mean? The vast majority of us almost always have two tracks of thought while in a conversation. The first track is what's happening in front of us, what the other person is saying, what they're doing, and the general real-life experience. The second track happens exclusively in our heads. It's where we're preparing what to say, thinking of how to reply, and generally not paying attention to the other person because we are caught up in planning. Unfortunately, the more uneasy you are in conversation, the more you increasingly will retreat to your second track, which obviously is counterproductive for what. This has been Improve Your Conversations. Think on your feet, witty banter, and always know what to say with Improv Comedy Techniques, second edition. Written by Patrick King, narrated by Russell Newton. Copyright 2021 by Patrick King. Production copyright by Patrick King.
Amazon.com has more information regarding the author and this book.
With an eclectic collection of water cooler knowledge, inspirational stories, and motivational thoughts from some of the newest audiobooks on the market, this has been the Voice Overwork Podcast, brought to you by Newton Media Group, a family of creative services.